Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we will be right back with our show right after this.
The Canto Group is a recruiting firm located in Dallas, Texas, that specializes in the placement of executives and engineering professionals with companies throughout Texas and Mexico. If your company is seeking quality candidates in the fields of general managers, plant managers, sales, CFOs, or controllers with a manufacturing background, production manager supervisors, engineering, specializing in mechanical, manufacturing, industrial, electrical, safety, or quality engineers, or designer drafters, feel free to contact our team regarding your company's future or current openings. Call Silvio Canto Jr. at 214-483-9505. Email the Canto Group at AOL.com or visit our website, thecantogroup.com.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday night, April 17th, day number 107 of 2011, and tonight we're going to be talking about the Bay of Pigs. It was exactly 50 years ago that the Bay of Pigs happened, a very important date for most of us Cuban Americans, for many of us, frankly. It was the reason why we came to the United States. It sort of opened up the door, if you will, that we would be coming to the United States, because at that point, it didn't make a lot of sense to stay in Cuba. But we'll be talking tonight with Humberto Fontova about the Bay of Pigs. And I want to focus on three things tonight. Number one, why was the brigade put together? You know, I've had the honor of meeting some of the men who were in the brigade, and each and every one of them that I've met is truly a patriot and someone who participated in this brigade, in this effort, because they wanted to liberate Cuba. What happened once they hit the beach? That's another question that I have for Humberto. You know, I've heard a lot of different stories. Were they supposed to get air support? What happened? You know, what happened to these men once they hit the beach? I think many of them were expecting air support. Otherwise, I don't think they would have landed where they landed, which was, frankly, a very swampy part of Cuba. And what were some of the consequences? What were some of the consequences of the Bay of Pigs? What exactly happened after the Bay of Pigs? You know, there are many, many people who felt that that was a turning point in the presidency of John Kennedy, who had only been president for about 3 months when the Bay of Pigs happened. Much of the planning and much of the Bay of Pigs had actually been put together under the Eisenhower administration. And it's interesting, when you go back to the Kennedy-Nixon debates of 1960, it was back then Senator Kennedy who was criticizing the Eisenhower administration for not being tough enough with Cuba. So ironically, it fell on him. And, to say the least, it was not a good moment. The word fiasco is often used when talking about the Bay of Pigs. And then, of course, shortly after that, about a year and a half later, came the Cuban Missile Crisis, when then the United States was forced to take a much tougher stand against the Soviet Union with respect to missiles in Cuba. So clearly the Bay of Pigs was the first of two very important steps in the early 1960s in the presidency of John Kennedy. We're waiting for Humberto Fontova to check in with us, and he will be, for those of you who don't know who Humberto is, he has written two very good books about Cuba, one about Che and the other one about Fidel Castro. In fact, you can get these books through my website or through Humberto's own website, and these are books, I have a link to Amazon, that's what I mean by my website. His last name is Fontova, F-O-N-T-O-V-A, and he's a best-selling author. You've seen him on shows like Hannity. You've seen him on shows like The O'Reilly Factor, Glenn Beck. I mean, he gets around. He does a lot of public speaking, at the universities, and he travels quite a bit around the country. Humberto Fontova, great author, great Cuban-American. In fact, I think we've got him on the phone. How are you, Humberto?
Pretty fair. What's going down?
Well, looking forward to our chat tonight about the Bay of Pigs. Maybe before we get into the topic, why don't you bring us up to date on some of your own projects? You've been pretty busy lately.
Well, the projects that I have, the books, it's titled The Longest Romance, Fidel Castro and the U.S. Media, or more properly, the U.S. Media and Fidel Castro, because they are really the suitors here. You know, he threw out his bait, and they came to him. And as he said, I mean, going back to 1954, propaganda is the heart of our struggle. So that will be the forthcoming book. Not exactly sure when it will be out. We're playing around with the publishers right now, but The Longest Romance, the U.S. Media and Fidel Castro. It's actually, like my other books, it's really a history of what went down in Cuba, has been going down in Cuba for the last half century. But you can't write a history book about Cuba. Let's face it, but we live in a nation where the term "that's history" is a pejorative. You know, most Americans aren't very interested in their own history. What would make them interested in the history of, you know, as a way of seeing some banana republic? Who cares about that? So you've got to have that media hook. Dan Rather, Herbert Matthews, Barbara Walters. Ah, now those names are recognized by, you know, most red state Americans. So it's a way to get them kind of quasi-interested in the horrors that have been taking place 90 miles from U.S. shores for the last half century.
Absolutely. We look forward to that book. One quick thing I wanted to ask you. I'm sure you've seen the news. I mean, it's almost laughable to hear Raul Castro talk about term limits in Cuba, but you've heard that, right, that he's now calling for limitations. And I'm sitting there saying, I mean, how can anybody take that man seriously when he makes a statement like that? I mean, term limits after he's been there for, what, 52 years? I mean, it's laughable. What do you think is driving him, though, to make a statement like that?
Nothing. He was probably drunk. You know, who knows? And knowing that there would have been, and there was not, any rebuttal from the media, you know, any idiocy that comes out of his mouth, or barbaridad, disparate, whatever, he knows he's not going to get a rebuttal from the media. He knows it's going to be gobbled up and spread out there by all the networks and agencies to which he has bestowed Havana bureaus. So it doesn't matter. I mean, he doesn't really have to really think his statements out. They're going to be thrown out there, and that's it. And the best thing, I think I saw it was the Miami Herald had some video clips and some quotes of some Cubans, I think it was at Versailles, as luck would have it, you know, commenting on this this Communist Party conference and all this and that, work councils, and they just basically they felt about it about the same way I do right now. They just said, forget it. I mean, nothing's going to happen. It's the same old stuff. These things have been going on. Nothing's going to change. You're going to make pronouncements. I loved it because that was exactly right. I mean, nothing is going to change. It's the same old, same old.
That's right.
One cruise missile would have solved the situation, and two jet planes with a few rockets firing 50 years ago tomorrow would have also solved it.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking to Humberto Fontova, and this is the 50th anniversary of the Bay of Pigs, or as they say in Cuba, Playa Girón. I want to ask you three questions tonight, or three topics about this issue of the Bay of Pigs or Playa Girón. First of all, I want to find out how the brigade was put together, how that happened. And then I want to talk a little bit about what happened once the men hit the beach, and the 48 hours or so of battle that took place. And then lastly, I want to find out about the consequences of the Bay of Pigs. So why don't we begin with that? How was this brigade put together? How did they start training? I understand it was under the Eisenhower administration. Why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, interestingly enough, it was Richard Nixon was known as the main booster of this operation. In April of 1959, Fidel Castro visited the United States. And he met, oh my goodness, ovations at the National Press Club, ovations at Harvard, ovations at a couple of other Ivy League colleges, ovations everywhere. Meet the press, softball questions, all the Sunday morning show. Well, he met with Richard Nixon. And Nixon came away from that meeting in his own words, he said, Castro is either extremely naive about communism or under the influence of communists. But the point is, in April of 1959, already Richard Nixon, let us remember, the first man to see through Alger Hiss, was among the first important U.S. I guess we should say policymakers.
Well, he was the vice president. He was the vice president at the time. Yeah, he was the vice president at the time, and probably thinking about the fact that he'd be running and would probably have to deal with this problem himself in about a year or so. So
the State Department at the time was hailing Fidel Castro to high heavens. As a matter of fact, the CIA, a gentleman that went under the name of Jerry Droller, also known as Frank Bender. He was the CIA's Cuba expert. Cuba expert. He didn't even speak Spanish. Okay? He had a meeting with Fidel Castro on that trip in April, and he came out of it saying, Fidel Castro is not only not a communist, he is a strong anti-communist fighter, and he is willing to help us fight communism in the Western Hemisphere. Folks, that was the CIA's Cuba expert of the time. And as a matter of fact, he was getting ready. He was proposing that the U.S. intelligence services share all of their intelligence with Fidel Castro. And a couple of people said, whoops, hold on here. That may not be such a wise idea, but that shows you the official reaction in the U.S. was going on. Nixon was, a voice in the wilderness. Thank goodness he was vice president, though. But it wasn't until a year later, it wasn't until late March of 1960 that the administration finally gave the go-ahead to the CIA to start, finding ways and to start planning a way to topple Castro. And it wasn't going to be an invasion at first. What they were going to do is they were train guerrillas, train infiltrators, and drop them into Cuba. You know, basically what they had in mind was exactly what they did in Guatemala in 1956 against Jacobo Arbenz, who was a leftist leader at the time. You know, they call him leftist. In fact, the only time, at the point when the U.S. started planning against him, is when he received a shipment of Soviet arms. Now, your professors and all the pinkos and all the experts, they'll say, oh, well, he was just a leftist, and he wanted to nationalize United Fruit property in Guatemala, and that's why the U.S. ousted him. Nothing remotely of the sort. The U.S. only started moving against him when he received Soviet arms, Czech arms, to be specific. And that was a very easy operation for the CIA. They recruited some Guatemalan military members, and they backed them, and And it happened. And that they thought it was going to be an easy thing in Cuba, too. Well, we did in Guatemala. You know, Cuba and Guatemala, it's basically the same countries, you know, the way people think in this country. You know, it's the same type of thing. Well, we just do it. No. So they were planning to infiltrate Cuban exiles as guerrillas, and, you know, to start sabotage and so forth in Cuba. But as things progress, it became obvious that it was almost impossible to arm the guerrillas. You got to remember, in Cuba at the time, remember we had a show about this, there was already a rebellion in the Escambray Mountains.
That's right. Well, the other point I wanted to make, Humberto, on that, not to interrupt you, but the other point I wanted to make is that Cuba is an island. So it's a little bit different from a military standpoint than Guatemala, where you had Nicaragua on one side, and you know, you had different ways of going in. But in Cuba, being an island, strategically, is a totally different situation.
Yeah, you're right. As a matter of fact, that what happened in Guatemala is the guys just came over from Honduras.
Right, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
The world. They came over, and it was an easy thing. But it was, you know, other than some tactical matters, it was the same concept. You know, oh, this will be a cinch. You know, well, you know, as we know, Cuba, Castro was a lot more popular at that time in Cuba than Jacobo Arbenz ever was in Guatemala. You know, but again, you don't want to blame, I don't want to blame the CIA and the military planners for this, because they were looking at it in a hard-headed fashion. And so, but what happened is that they found it very difficult to supply the rebels. You know, once again, it was going to be a clandestine thing, help supply the Escambray rebels, infiltrate the island with more saboteurs, and get this thing going. Well, it became impossible to supply the arms drops to the Escambray rebels, and that never came off. They most of them landed in the hands of the commies and so forth. It just wasn't panning out. And then news came down that Castro was going to be receiving MiGs from the Soviet Union and a lot more arms. And that's when I said, whoops, okay, well, forget this infiltration and sabotage and stuff. We are going to mount an invasion. And originally they planned 5,000 exiles to find it. But the time factor didn't allow for it. You know, the Cubans were coming from Cuba at the time and landing in Miami, and the word was out. You know, everybody knew it. But here's an interesting thing that the CIA did. This is a military invasion of Cuba, right? So what do? One of the first things they do is they eliminate most Cubans with a military background, because they were, you know, they didn't want anyone even slightly tainted with Batistianismo. They didn't want anyone who had absolutely any relationship with Batista whatsoever. Well, Batista had been very influential. He'd been the head, you know, in one way or the other, of the Cuban military since 1933. How are you going to find Cubans with a military background that weren't in some way associated with the guy at one time or the other? But, you know, the CIA, which you've got to realize, you know, most people think of the CIA as a right-wing bunker. No. The CIA, in fact, was always mistrusted by Richard Nixon himself. Most conservatives back in the 50s and the 60s and the 40s, well, it didn't start till the late 40s, were always very, very mistrustful of the CIA, because they were basically just like the Kennedy people. They were Ivy League liberal pinkos, by and large. And so, you know, a lot of people say, well, they were, you know, they were spies. And I say, no, it's not that. It's just they were wedded to this democratic left philosophy. And that is why the CIA, by the way, had backed Fidel Castro and the Julio Wentise movement. In fact, there's a quote from the Caribbean chief of the CIA. He served in that role from 57 to 60. His name was Robert Reynolds, he says. Me and my staff were all fidelistas. You know, I don't think, you know, a lot of people say, well, you see, that's a proof that the CIA has been infiltrated by the Bilderbergers. They were wedded to this democratic left philosophy, and they took Julio Ventise at their word. You know, that's what it was. Well, now all these guys have got to shift to, well, now we've got to try to topple this guy. You know, they never admitted they had been wrong to begin with. So they started recruiting Fidelistas sin Fidel, as a general rule. You know, the guys in Cuba, la revolución traicionada. You know, the guys who had backed Castro, initially, Howard Hunt wrote a fabulous book on it called Give Us This Day. He was the political action officer for the CIA recruiting the Cubans and so forth. And he says, every single Cuban that I was given to work with, the political head, had backed Castro. Howard Hunt said, I considered most of them shallow thinkers and opportunists. Wow, that's a horrible thing for me to be saying on April 17th. But I'm talking about the political issue. I'm not talking about the guys who hit that beachhead. And by the way, these guys, the political guys, were also extremely, extremely brave. But it just goes to show you that when you hear people saying, well, we were trying to impose Batistianismo again on Cuba, nothing remotely of the sort. Rafael Diaz Balart, Mario and Lincoln's father, was banned from joining the Bay of Pigs invasion. How many of our listeners know that? He was banned by it because he had had, you know, an association with Batista.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Most people don't realize Lincoln and Mario's dad was not allowed in the political realm, in a political position. And he said, well, the heck with it. I want to join as a soldier. They didn't allow him to do that. Yeah. And I know, I spoke with a lot of guys who, in their words, they belong to the El Ejército Constitucional de Cuba. Not Batista's army. I said, I didn't even like the guy. But the fact that they had been in the Cuban military when Batista was running Cuba automatically eliminated them. You know, not all of them, a lot. Some of them slipped through and fought heroically. Ernesto Oliva, Pepe San Roman, Hugo Suero fought heroically.
Mm-hmm.
But this goes to show you the way that the CIA was going about this thing. And, you know, we can go talk about this stuff forever. The bottom line is it was planned by Eisenhower and Nixon. Nixon's the main booster.
Right.
And it landed in the lap of Kennedy.
Between the planning or the time that this happens, of course, there's an election in the United States, and like you were saying, Kennedy won the election, and then you have these debates between Kennedy and Nixon, and I've gone back and watched them, not just because of Cuba, but for other reasons, because as you know, that was the first televised debate in American history, and I've gone back, and the points. When Kennedy and Nixon are debating, Kennedy is trying to get to the right of Nixon in Cuba, and you can look at Nixon's face knowing that, I mean, in retrospect now, we can look at his face and saying, look, we're the ones who are doing this. We're putting this plan. You're criticizing us for doing nothing, you know, and yet we're doing this. Now, Kennedy's elected. He comes in, and he's handed this plan. He's told, look, this is going to happen in a couple of months. He approves it, I assume, you would think the president approves it, Humberto. And then these men hit the beach 50 years today. What happens? What were they? I mean, what were they told in terms of assurances and promises, Humberto, that the United States was going to do?
Well, another interesting thing about the debates, Kennedy had been briefed by Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA. He had been briefed about the training camps.
Okay, I didn't know that.
They were already training those. Yeah, they were training. So when he, during those debates, when he called out Nixon and the Republicans, we have allowed a communist dictatorship to flourish 8 jet minutes from our borders. And we are not giving the freedom fighters, the Cuban freedom fighters, support. That was a bald-faced lie. He knew good and well that we were already, Nixon, the Republicans, were already training Cuban freedom fighters. But since the training was secret, he knew Nixon couldn't rebut. Don't you see? And Nixon could have stomped him, could have stomped him during the interview, saying, but guess what? That's why you see that look on his face. He bit his lip for the sake of national security.
That's right. So, and amazing, amazing situation. Now, when these men hit the beach, Humberto, exactly 50 years ago today, what were they, you know, what did they think was going to happen? There was, an American aircraft carrier not far from Playa Girón or Bay of Pigs. Were these men thinking that there was going to be air support? Was that part of the plan?
Well, yeah, of course they said. An American fleet, not just the carrier Essex, but several destroyers and cruisers had escorted the Brigadistas from Nicaragua to Cuba. It's you can imagine those guys. They're seeing these huge ships and the plane. Oh, my goodness. And put yourself in their place. 1961, the U.S. had never lost a war. This is pre-Vietnam, you know, everything. The U.S. was the victor of World War II. Korea was still seeing a victory. And these guys are backing us. So those guys were absolutely pumped. Never, never, ever did they dream, you know, that they were going to be let down and say, hey, the U.S. is backing us on this thing. That's it. We got it made. So when they hit the beach and the first milicianos and police brigades that they ran across also thought that way. They said, well, the Yankees are finally coming. Okay. And they started surrendering in droves, hundreds of them. I had three cousins at the Bay of Pigs, by the way, and they'll tell you, they're sitting there guarding, you know, hundreds of milicianos, because the milicianos say they're coming. They say, okay, the Yankees are finally here. It's all over. Let's switch sides. Whoops. But then as things progress, they realize, well, wait a minute. Maybe the Yankees aren't coming. Maybe it's just these guys. And that's when things started going downhill. But a show of force, as a matter of fact, when two of the jets from the Essex flew over the beachhead, two of the jets, Castro's artillery stopped shooting. Stopped shooting because they said, whoops, this is over. Let's, you know, we want to be on the winning side here. And then the jets kept flying without firing a single shot, so they resumed shooting.
Now, one of the consequences of the Bay of Pigs or the aftermath of the Bay of Pigs was the Great Repression in Cuba. I was at my parents' home today, and my father was relating a story that he had gone to work that day. My dad was a banker in Cuba, and he went to work that day. And as soon as he got to his appointment, he got a phone call from his job. He was working at Banco Nacional de Cuba, which was the bank that took over Banco Continental Cubano, which is where he used to work. And immediately he was told, hey, don't come to work because they're lining up people. And some of his friends were actually arrested. And our cousin, or my dad's cousin, was also arrested. And my dad basically went into hiding for about 48 hours. And many other men, too, because they were just arresting people like crazy. I mean, there had thousands of men at La Cabana, and of course, thousands in prisons all over. So it was not only bad in the sense that a great opportunity to overthrow Castro was passed up, Humberto, but also it was bad for the Cuban people. The repression that came after that was intense, wasn't it?
As a matter of fact, according to Armando Valladares in Against All Hope, that week, exactly 50 years ago, 350,000 Cubans were incarcerated. That means one of every 18 Cubans was a political prisoner 50 years ago this week.
Wow, that is just amazing. That is just absolutely amazing.
That and is a higher incarceration rate than Stalin during the Great Terror.
Wow, that is amazing. We're talking to Humberto Fontova, the great author of a couple of great books about Cuba, about Che and Fidel Castro. And I've always recommended to everyone listening that you buy a copy of your of Humberto's books for your son who's graduating or your daughter who's graduating now here in May. In June, give them a copy of that book before they go to college. It's going to serve them quite well before they go to college. It's a great defense to have that book with them when they're going to college. Well, let me ask you one last question. This is such an amazing topic, but obviously we only have so much time. But what were the consequences, in your opinion, to the United States after this? Because I've heard, for example, some people I've read in different places, number one, of course, the missile crisis happened because the Soviets thought that Kennedy was weak. But even Vietnam, I've read that Kennedy, one of the reasons that he even started sending men to Vietnam was because he wanted to prove to the Soviets that he was tough. So this little incident that for most people, you know, most people don't even remember except us Cuban Americans, had very profound consequences on American foreign policy, didn't Humberto?
It was Eugene Rostow, who was one of the Kennedy brain trusters at the time, who's telling him about that. He says, "Oh, don't worry. We'll stand up to the commies elsewhere, maybe in Southeast Asia." So half a million of our boys, American boys, are sent thousands upon thousands of miles away to fight communism. But we couldn't send two planes to shoot maybe 10 or 12 rockets 90 miles away from U.S. shores. But the most immediate consequences were in Berlin, the Berlin Wall. You see, when Ike took Kennedy to the woodshed after, Kennedy said, "Well, I was afraid that if we went in with the air support for the brigade guys, for those Cuban guys, then the Russians would react." And Ike said, "No, no, no, sir. It's the exact opposite. The Russians are going to react if you show weakness." Precisely 4 months later, the Berlin Wall started going up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let me ask you, I've always had one curiosity about the Bay of Pigs, or let's say the first 48 hours or the first 24 hours of the Bay of Pigs. Where was Castro during all of this time? Because I was asking my father this today, and he doesn't remember. He doesn't have a recollection. Do you know, was Castro, I've heard rumors that he was trying to figure out a way to get out of the country. Where was he, to the best of your knowledge?
No, I don't think he was trying to get out of the country. You know, I don't think he got that far. But he was confused. They were trying to figure out where the invasion, because there was a diversionary little attack in extreme western Cuba, Pinar del Rio. In fact, the CIA sent a few boats off the coast of Pinar del Rio with bottle rockets, Roman cannon, basically a fireworks show and a gigantic and amplified sounds of battle. Boom, 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 boom. And they thought that the invasion, so Castro thought the invasion was going to come in Pinar del Rio. And so that's where he sent Che Guevara. Che Guevara spent the entire invasion in Pinar del Rio, you know, in front of a fireworks display and an amplified soundtrack of the Sands of Iwo Jima, basically. You know, they were completely confounded there. Well, but Fidel was he was going back and forth. He didn't really know what was going on at the time, but I don't think he was trying to get out of the country. He was confused and he was scared, but I don't think he tried to get out of the country. And he did finally show up at the beachhead when it was obvious that the U.S. was not going to intervene.
Right.
That's when he showed up.
How many men Humberto were killed of Brigade 2506? How many men were lost in the battle or injured?
The official figure for killed is 114, about 100 on our side. But actually, if you talk to Brigadistas, only 68 of them actually died in combat. The Che Guevara-trained milicianos were so, and I feel sorry for these guys at the time, or they didn't know what was coming down, but they were so incompetent. And then, by the way, they were led by a Soviet general, Angel Ciutat. He was actually a Catalan, a Spanish communist who had fought in the Spanish Civil War and then gone to the Soviet Union. And then he was in Cuba and already in February of 59. He was among the commanding the Castro troops. As a matter of fact, Carlos Franchi wrote a book, and I read it, and he said that the Cubans, if you talk to the Brigadistas, it was a very difficult thing to get them to talk about it, because it said the milicianos, the Castro people, would come at them in human in waves, and it would just mow them down. How many people realize that our guys, let's just say we lost 100, they lost about 1,800 killed and another 2,000 wounded? How can such incompetence? And Franchi seems to think that the Soviet commanders that they had, they weren't technically Soviet, they were Spaniards, but they had become Soviets after the Spanish Civil War, were using the same tactics that the Russians used in World War II and that the communists used in the Korean War, human wave attacks. So these poor milicianos, muchachitos, guajiritos, are going, and our guys have got to mow them down. You know, they're not, it's difficult. I've interviewed a lot of them for them to talk about it, but he said it was just ridiculous how Castro's forces came at them almost suicidally. And it's a terrible thing. I mean, our guys inflicted casualties of 20-1 against those guys. It is really, when you think about it, it's one of the most inglorious military stompings in history, how 1,500 guys stood up to 30,000 Castro troops and inflicted casualties of 20-1.
Amazing. I did not know that. That is amazing information. Humberto Fontova, a great Cuban American. I was going to call you a great American like Hannity, but I'm not. but you are a great American, great Cuban American as well, and author of a couple of great books that I've read, and many of you have read. My favorite one is Che. I think that is a book, as I say, that I would recommend to any dad or mom who has a son graduating from high school or even someone in college. Humberto, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It is, in many ways, a sad anniversary for us Cuban Americans. But we move on and we look forward to the day when the great heroism of these men can be recognized in Cuba.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Anytime. Glad to be here. Glad
All right.
to honor these brave, brave men.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why we're doing the show tonight. Have a great great weekend. We hope to talk to you later, Humberto. And we're going to take a break, and we will be right back. Thank you, Humberto.
Canto Group is a recruiting firm located in Dallas, Texas that specializes in the placement of executives and engineering professionals with companies throughout Texas and Mexico. If your company is seeking quality candidates in the fields of general managers, plant managers, sales, CFOs or controllers with a manufacturing background, production managers and supervisors, engineering specializing in mechanical manufacturing, industrial, electrical, safety, or quality engineers, or designers and drafters, feel free to contact our team regarding your company's future or current openings. Call Silvio Canto Jr. at 214-483-9505. Email thecantogroup@aol.com or visit our website, thecantogroup.com.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas on Sunday, April 17th, and we just had a great conversation there with Humberto Pontoba, a great Cuban-American author. He's written, as I said, that book about Che Guevara. He also wrote a book about Fidel. And, you know, I'm serious when I say if you have a daughter or a son who's graduating from high school, you want to get him a copy of that Che book so that when he goes to college, he will have information to debate some of the left-wing professors that he's going to run into. But, you know, I know that this show tonight will be heard by some people in Miami and perhaps by some of the heroic men of Brigade 2506. And I just want to tell you, on behalf of so many Cuban Americans, these were great heroes who I think were let down by, unfortunately, an American mistake. And but these men were great heroes, and as Humberto was saying, they put on a heck of a fight. And they were truly, clearly men who deserved better, but did not get that. But I think someday, sometime in the future, I think their heroism and their patriotism will be recognized not just by us here living in the United States, but by the people of Cuba. These were great men of the Brigade 2506, and it is to them, really, that we do this show, that we honor the great work that they did. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking to Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda, and I'm going to be asking Bill about the anniversary of the Bay of Pigs from the perspective of what an impact it had on the Kennedy administration, because Bill was, at the time, working in the Kennedy administration. So I want to talk to him a little bit about that. But again, we salute all of the men who were part of that mission, the Brigade 2506, 50 years ago today, the anniversary of the Bay of Pigs, or as they say in Cuba, Playa Girón. We're going to leave you tonight. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a good Sunday night, and we'll talk to you the next time. Thank you very much.
This is Silvio Canto. Thank you very much for listening to our show. We'll be back the next time with more guests, more commentary, and a lot of interesting information. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great day.